welcome back, everybody. Next up on our new business agenda is the IEP update. Obviously, there's a quarterly report given to the legislature. I see Bob and Nick at the head of the table. And
Gene coming up.
Gene coming up with his
pocket square.
Pocket square. not looking like he's been in North Pole. I don't know if that's either that or his son lamp in North Pole.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, welcome, gentlemen.
The 3CAP item 7B is an update on the Interior Energy Project and a summary of the quarterly report for the IEP submitted to the Alaska Legislature on January 1st, 2016. And we have Bob Sheftig, Gene Terrio, and Nick Shimoniak here to present, call in others as needed, and answer questions.
Thank you, John. Bob?
Good afternoon. Quarterly report to the legislature. You had a full agenda and you have more work to do, so I'm not going to walk you through everything in it. I know you can read, but I'm going to walk and highlight a couple of things and give you, this is your opportunity to ask questions on things that you read as we went along. Gene will talk about conversions as we get to that point, and Nick did the financial page, and so he'll touch on that. Just flipping through, the format is the same, the structure is the same. If you look at the list of attachments on page II, many of those you've already seen, and so that you don't have the attachments on here, I'll draw your attention to the instructions. The finalist for best and offer is something you haven't seen. The last railroad letter you probably hadn't seen as a board, and heating oil price sensitivity reports, attachments A, E, and H. So if you were going through the report and you wanted to pick out ones to read, those are the ones that I would highlight for you, haven't been in your packets and you haven't seen as part of the quarter that this report resulted from. The introduction consistently tells you the requirements of how to
Nope. And they don't seem to be in the packet, huh?
They are not in your packet. The attachments were 170-some pages, and so...
And the problem is...
we're in a budget austerity issue, and in your packet it tells you you can find them on the IEP website.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Introduction covers requirements of House Bill 105. This report is not a requirement of the law, it's intent language, but clearly we want to follow the intent of the legislature, so every quarter the legislature gets an update, and you're spared a PowerPoint, and we just summarize what went to the legislature the previous week when we come to you. Under supply, we're still working both Cook Inlet and North Slope, and we've got the teams working on contracts from both. The intent is to have signed term sheets underneath either potential investments before it goes to the evaluation committee. Almost all of that is under non-disclosure. So to talk about who and amounts and terms right now, I can't do, but I can tell you they're progressing along, and we're talking to multiple provider gas suppliers from both directions. And if there's one tall pole leading to the evaluation committee meeting and a recommendation coming to you, it'll be making sure that there's an appropriate gas contract that the utilities are comfortable with underneath each of the vendors.
Bob, do you have a date for the next evaluation committee meeting?
The evaluation committee meeting is scheduled for the 22nd, which is a week from Friday. And as things are progressing in terms of the clarifications asked, the term sheet discussions that are ongoing, and the third-party review of operating and capital expenses, those are all queued up to be ready for the 22nd. When you're negotiating with somebody on the other side, if a meeting doesn't happen on the 22nd, in my mind, it'll be not having a gas contract inked. And then everything else will wait while that comes together is the time we've got together. But right now, it's a week from Friday. It's the plan that the evaluation committee will come and make a recommendation on which project.
Thank you.
Under liquefaction, this is almost all history. You've seen almost all of this across time. The big change, you might have seen some of the discussion in the newspaper at the bottom of page 3, you've got the Golden Valley action that cemented they are going to be a summer customer only and not a year-round, and that differentially impacts higher capital costs and higher operating cost projects because there's less demand to go underneath it. But, you know, that it's their call on how they're going to approach it. We had asked both board member Wilkin and two local mayors had asked them to delay in order to get the projects from our process lined up, and they chose not to do that. And so that does affect our project. It doesn't affect it as much as them not being a customer at all, but it does negatively affect particularly a high capital project. Under transportation, we will take a little break, and if you can click on our video, the pilot trucking project has been ongoing. You've seen a lot of the press coverage in your way.
No, 9,500 gallons is what's being carried in the trailers that are in existence. We expect to carry 13,000 gallons.
We think we can reduce the cost, fuel delivery cost, by over 35%.
The trailer platform is proven. It's recognized for the Alaska market.
And a lot of work by Carson as well as Dan at FMG in order to work with the trailer manufacturer to make all this happen. Okay, you're the chair. We'll go as long as you want. It's quite a trailer.
It's really interesting to see how that thing runs by the small on Darrell Road.
There you go.
That's not bad. There's not any problem.
A number of times last week because our partners Hyla and Western Cascade are providing it. They wanted it last week for something here in Anchorage, and so next week it runs to and from the North Slope, at least once full and once empty, and then we'll have a report for you that's written on end results. Initial returns are, it's not hauling 13,000 gallons at this point because of the gross weight. It's in the 12.3 to 12.5 range, but that's still significant over the 9,500 to 10,000 gallons that a smaller trailer, and we'll look at the economics for you after we're done with the evaluation.
Is part of that reason the weight of the tractor?
Yes.
Yeah, so we paired it with the same tractor so far, the first five loads. We're going to work with our trucking company to see if we can optimize a little further. It is a heavy tractor we're hauling up it right now. But so we're going to look to see if we can squeeze that up a little further. But it happened right now, the total about 12,300 or so gallons. We're hitting 109,000 pounds a little over, so we're right on the mark. Maximum.
What would it weigh with a typical truck that you deal with in, if it was full, how much over would it be? 13,000.
Oh, it would be a gallon of LNG weighs about 3.5 pounds. So to get another 500 pounds would be, another 500 gallons is going to be 1,700 pounds or so. So be over a few thousand pounds.
So, is there an if there isn't an opportunity to address the weight of the tractor and remain robust with the trailer for longevity, would someone talk to DOT about a waiver for the one ton?
Yeah, I think we could approach DOT in the past.
But it's only one ton. I mean, it's like a very small amount.
In the past, we've had others, and I think we've had some limited success with what they call a reducible load, but perhaps given the impacts of this project we'd be willing to reconsider.
Yeah, one ton is very little in it.
Would a less robust tractor be optimal for a commercial pump?
I think we have a little bit of room to take some weight off the tractor. We can go with maybe a little bit smaller super capacity and a few other things, and we could manage your fuel and a couple of different criteria there, but we can't shave thousands of pounds off the tractor and be able to effectively haul them. So we have a little more room on the Parks Highway run, but when you're on the North Slope run and your driver is really relying on that, the sleeper berth is a safe haven as well, and so you can only push so far.
And we need to remember, this is just not one tractor, it's 30 or 40 tractors.
Right. One of the challenges right now is we're dealing with a transportation company that hauls multiple products and multiple trucks on any given day, and it's not necessarily, we don't have a tractor today dedicated to that trailer. When we're talking about the North Slope haul, each one of those tractors will be dedicated to that haul, those trailers, and we can match them up more specifically.
Heck, we're a couple thousand pounds off. I mean, we're there. Yeah. We don't have to worry about that. I forget where I saw it. Carson will remember, but the fellow that represents Western Cascade gave a brief on the PUP also, that they were actually contemplating that, and that was last week or so. So at least that's in the mix. People are talking about it.
Yeah, legally you could haul a pup behind the trailer on the, on the cook inlet. There, you cannot on the bus door. So there's some consideration still to be given, but there is a potential.
Well, it'd be interesting to see how it does coming down loaded at Attican Pass.
We're going to run it full back and forth, and the reason we're going to take it empty then is just because we need to simulate. We're running really opposite what normal fluid traffic does. We're running full up, empty back. In the North Slope scenario, we're going to be doing that opposite. So the grades and everything have been set more specifically for the way it falls today. So we just want to make sure we
also transportation, the rail option. I pointed out the letter. That's news from November, and so you've all seen it probably in the press. But The Federal Railroad Administration provided meaningful authorization in November, as opposed to one that was limited both in time and in number of trips that came out the first time.
Yeah,
Mr. Chairman?
Fred?
So Mr. Shefchik referred me to the IEP website to look at the attachments, and I pulled up attachment FH on heating oil price sensitivity report. And in it, it states as assumptions that single-family rental properties will convert at a slower rate, but it footnotes Table 2 to say that it assumes existing home or construction year rate of conversion for the study area. Where I'm really going with my question is, this is a significant report in the sense of what's questions that will be asked of us, and I just wonder if you might give us a two-paragraph summary of what you think this report says, particularly at current pricing.
You bet. If you switch to page 8.
Well, I just followed you to attachment 8.
Yeah, because I would talk about that when we got to page 8, because you see the natural gas customer projection on page 8. That is a smaller number than was in the report a quarter ago. And the Cliff Notes summary of the attachment H is conversions, the way Cardinal did it was willingness to convert, and they did a calculation based on both economics and age and models of furnaces to come up with the willingness to convert, and had projected at a $4 fuel oil willingness to convert of 72% across a 6-year period of time. And the analysis, he did about 4 or 5, maybe even 6 scenarios in the report. We picked the most conservative one, that oil prices went down and stayed down across a period of time, and came up with about a 51%. So you lose a third of your conversions.
And same 6-year period.
No, stretched 8 years. So you see a lower peak and a longer time to get
there. That's at $2 or something?
That's it. Was at $2.75 was the analysis on that, which starting in 2018 and working your way forward from there is still in the range of where both the state and the EAI are for prices of oil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And that is significant, and it changes the dynamic and economics of building out using bond funds. I think we talked about this a couple meetings ago. If you look at lower demands and a stretched out period of time, it'll be harder to make the choices of when does a build out occur that's funded by bonds. And so we expect to see both utilities and AIDA's administration focusing on the core of the plant, the pipe that's in the ground, and making sure that you stay within the capital and the FEX money available before you extend to a monthly mortgage that is not patient.
Mr. Chairman, doesn't that decline in the conversion rate drive the need for local mandates because of the health concern? I mean, at what point are we going to speak to that issue?
I don't know that it drives the need for local mandates, but it will certainly
reinforce.
It reinforces, and as you look at the actions that are being taken within the borough right now, discussions of creating different layers, levels of non-attainment between North Pole and town, you might see more targeted use of funds. You know, we might make a policy call or a recommendation to you, or you may see money from DEC that affects differentially the North Pole poor air quality areas rather than the core town, so it may also affect your build out and your conversion strategy targeted in North Poles. You see right now wood stove change out programs that are funded through air quality money. You might see some of that in certain areas with poor air quality for
conversions.
It would be my guess is what you'd see before you saw requirements.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Conversions. I'll let Gene talk a little more about conversions. In terms of, we looked at the numbers on page 8, but that's the calculated numbers. The work that the community group has been doing on conversions. Gene continues to be the ADA representative, not to take over the conversion program, but to make sure it moves along because it's critical to our success and to provide support where they need it.
Mr. Chairman, so what? What we've done to date, the conversion working group has not met for a while as the team tried to solidify the supply.
Can I detect the new accent?
It's Afrikaans.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I anticipate that once we get the issue of the supply nailed down, the local working group will sort of re-engage and look at the different tools that might be put into place. One of the tools is legislation that is teed up right now and pending in both the House and Senate Finance Committee. That's the PACE legislation, a mechanism that the local government could help deploy that would help businesses convert and finance the conversion of those businesses. It is a mechanism that has gained a lot of acceptance across the nation, and so we would be able to take advantage of what many other states and jurisdictions have learned as far as utilizing that mechanism.
You have a question?
Yeah, one question on the PACE legislation. This is just to businesses, not to residents. And some states, like in some parts of California, they use PACE legislation for residential as well for alternative energy projects. And I understand there's some problems with mortgage lending in some cases, but is any more consideration being given to that?
At this point, we have discussed whether we should advise the legislature to extend that pending legislation to include residential mortgages. My recommendation would be that because of the uncertainty on how portfolios of loans for residential could then be, it would impact the ability to sell them into the secondary market, that we probably, my recommendation would be not to expand it at this point. We really want to get the mechanism in place so that we can work with businesses in the Fairbanks North, or the F&G existing territory, where the majority of the businesses in the light industry are in Fairbanks. We would like to get as many of them to sign up sooner rather than later because they're high volume customers, and that would help the economics of the project. Then we could look to see what happens across the nation with regards to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and secondary loan market accepting PACE financing in their portfolios, and then add that residential component later. But rather than risk passage of the legislation, I think it's best to keep it just to business, because it will take probably about a year to work out the details with the local government on how you roll PACE out, advise your business, potential business clientele, how they use it, and really get it going.
But it is a more powerful mechanism for residential. It's not predicated on anybody's credit history or report. You get loans regardless. On the cities.
It can be a powerful tool.
It's a very powerful tool.
But there are other mechanisms, and for residential in particular, something called on-bill financing, which could be a lot of
simplify the same thing.
So anyway.
Are you still on conversions?
Yeah.
Go ahead and finish.
So the PACE legislation, Emily Ford, who's the lead liaison with AEA, she and I met with the Senate Finance Committee and just requesting consideration to have that bill scheduled up sooner rather than later in the legislative session. It's a zero fiscal note, even though it was referred to finance. It potentially taps into a source of funding, a federal source of funding at a low interest rate. So we're hoping that we can get it moved through the Finance Committees before they get bogged down with oil and gas and taxation issues in the legislature. So we're keeping our fingers crossed there. A number of other programs. There is the existing HFC program, that is the Home Energy Rebate Program, that currently has money in this fiscal year. IGU did send out flyers to encouraging people to consider utilizing that program while it does have money. I myself utilized it to change out my boiler, and now I just need to have the post audit done and apply for my rebate, which will be $4,000. So it's a substantial pay down on the replacement of my boiler, which will then be easily converted to natural gas, or more easily converted to natural gas when it isn't available. I've also identified a potential funding source from the State Clean Water Fund. Has started discussions with DEC about how we might tap into that fund. The emissions from utilizing fuel oil, there are higher emissions with that source of energy than would be from natural gas. A portion of the Clean Water Fund is targeted at reduction of non-point source emissions. And so the PM2.5 and use of fuel oil would qualify. And I think we can potentially tap into a source of money there that comes with a 1 to 1.5% interest rate that could then be passed on and made available to residences that would need to finance conversions. I've also identified an emerging energy efficiency conservation loan program that's operated by RUS. It comes with a low interest rate. And we've gotten clarification from RUS that AIA or AEA would qualify as an entity that could tap into those funds and be a conduit to pass them on to the utility to loan them out either through a PACE mechanism or an on-bill mechanism, again, to help finance conversions and be patient, lower interest rates, and a longer payback period of time. So I've asked Sarah Fisher go to AEA to try and get further clarification from RUS, something a little bit more formal than the email response that we got saying that, yes, in fact, the state entities, AIDA, AEA, would qualify as the entity that could tap into those federal funds and then pass them through to the consumer. So I'm just trying to identify different sources of non-GF money. They come with low interest rate, favorable loan terms, longer payback periods that could be used to help people to convert and hopefully be cash positive compared to if they were just to continue to use fuel oil. The lowering the price of fuel oil as a result of lower price of crude oil is certainly putting the squeeze on that, but I think we need to put these mechanisms into place and get ready to tap into these fund sources, if at all possible. The final one was with the passage of the federal budget in December. There was an increase in a line item to EPA for targeted airshed grants, an increase in funding of $10 million to a program that has primarily been used by California due to the air quality problems that they have there. Senator Murkowski was very instrumental in getting that increase. And so I've now started to talk to DEC about how we work with Region 10 to put together a competitive application to try and capture as much of that increased funding as possible. I note in some of the newspaper or the national reporting that I monitor, there was a story just yesterday that Los Angeles area has a serious non-attainment for soot, in other words, for PM2.5. And so there may be pressure on California to try and gobble up more of that money than the $10 million that they have historically been using. So, but I think that we, working with DEC and Region 10 and Fairbanks North Borough, could probably put together a pretty competitive application to try and capture part of that increased $10 million. And those would be grant dollars. And it may be that it would be targeted at the North Pole non-attainment area, the worst areas in the Fairbanks North Scarborough with regards to the PM2.5, and it could potentially pay down or offer a cash incentive to help people convert to the cleaner burning fuel. So a number of things that we'll try and move forward on rapidly once we know that we have a supply of gas to actually to make available to consumers.
Great.
Gene, thank you for that report. I think we all know how important conversions are, and a lot of those successes that you just listed are a result of the conversion committee meeting, and my experience is it's been pretty much below the radar, but they have been meeting. And would I not be correct in that anyone can attend those, and if they're either critical or they're helpful, they're welcome to come, and those meetings will be it can be accessed through the IEP team in Fairbanks. Is that correct?
That's correct. It certainly is a meeting that is open, and anybody that wants to come and help and bring a particular perspective from the community is welcome to present.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, it's on page 9. It gives you the update on the Senate Bill 23/House Bill 105 funds that started with the 57.5, the 125, and the $150 million respectively for capital appropriations, sets and bonds, and so Mike will tell you where we are.
Okay. So the costs are broken into three sources of funding: the capital appropriations, sets and bonds, and then by spending. So the first category of spending is development costs. We've broken that into IEP Phase 1 and IEP Phase 2. For lack of a better word, IEP Phase 1 ended at the termination of the concession agreement. IEP Phase 2 began afterwards when we started looking at alternatives. So the $190,000 we spent out of the capital appropriation has all been since last January when we started this effort again to broaden the search for energy supply for the interior. The next category down, loans and investments. This is strictly the, at this point, it's the sets loans that have been made to the IGU and FNG. And this is the total amount of loans committed, not the total spend. And at this point, we have not issued any bonds for the project.
Nick, on phase one of the IEP under the capital appropriation, the North Slope pad is $6 million. Could you tell me what the final disposition was on the pad building and the discrepancy we had with the contractor as far as volume on the pad? What else was that settled?
It's been a long time since I've looked at the status of the pad discrepancy. I think Matt Harris was the person that was running that. I can get that to you.
I know Mark was looking at Mark Davis. And, yeah. The pad discrepancy cost that was the challenge was the yards of gravel. Has that been resolved?
It's my understanding, I've heard Tom a little bit, but that we did resolve it. TIC is kind of a general resolution with them.
And what was the end result?
That we paid less than they wanted.
Okay. How did you tie it into the yardage?
Well, that was an issue.
Bank yards or
the sloughing we really couldn't completely come to terms on there was a potential ambiguity in the contract from their point of view, so we compromised.
Yeah, there was.
For the record, Tom Erickson. My understanding was, I think we were talking about the gravel was, there's another claim because of we had to pay, was it at DEC?
Yeah.
Right, the DEC. That wasn't mentioned in the contract. It was not mentioned, but it was a cost that they incurred, and as such, we looked at it as if we can't get something for nothing, so we ended up paying the...
Are you talking royalties?
No, it wasn't. Well, yeah, was that one of these? I think DEC, they claim so much per yard. That was
DNR
part of the cost, but it was
a DNR.
DNR. I think.
Okay.
And it was part of the cost of the gravel itself that we ended up we couldn't get the gravel without paying DNR, but it just wasn't mentioned in the contract at that time. So there was a discussion between parties, and we ended up paying the, I think it was $135,000, something like that for the claim.
The answer is we didn't come prepared to fully answer that, and so we will.
Okay. Typically, the contractor is responsible for royalty charges, not the owner. Now the contractor pricing it, so it's priced to the owner. Typically, the contractor is responsible. The contractor operates the pit, does the mining, removes the material, takes it off-site. And then there's the other issue about the actual yardage on the site. So I hadn't heard anything about it. The last I heard that there was a that also is an ambiguity between bank yards, club and hall yards. Mm-hmm.
And for the board's information, you've got a compacted yard at the bank. When you drill and shoot it, it floods. Mm-hmm. So as you know, Brad, are you charging the bank yards or club yards? Because it's about a 20% difference. Okay.
Tom will get you something in writing.
Right. Thank you.
Important line on this one to look at is remaining funds down at the very bottom. Because that tells you how the funds that are remaining out of Senate Bill 23/House Bill 105, first call will go towards the project plan that comes forward to you. Then it will be a utility/ADA decision on, does it go into pipe? Does it go into storage? Does it go into LCE? Does it go into trucks? And right now there's $43 million of remaining grant funds and $72.2 million of remaining SETS funds. That gets back to my earlier discussion on demand. It's unlikely you'll see much of that $150 million of bonds tapped until you see the differential between oil and gas. Again.
Is there anything going on with that cab up there, by the way, or using it for anything?
It was leased and it's been turned back over to ADA, I believe, because you asked me last month, so I can check.
Okay. How big is the cab?
Jim?
15 acres. Nominally 15. I think 17 was fits in the road. The 15 usable acres.
So if a Cook Inlet project is picked, it's an asset that can benefit the IEP. If it's a North Slope project, that's the sites that the proposer is looking at for a North Slope project.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, sir.
Two questions. House Bill 105 also required language for us to finalize a plan and bring it back before the legislature.
Yes.
That's post our selection process. That's coming.
It requires that the ADA board approve a plan with three required components, and one is the source of gas, one is the uses of money, and the third one escapes me. I feel like I'm in a final exam sometime here. But there's three requirements in House Bill 105, and the plan that comes before the board is required to identify those, and you're to act on them. There isn't a report back to the legislature, but the next quarterly report would say what you did. It's not a project plan that goes to the legislature. The final compromise with the project plan comes to you as a board.
The follow-up question, Mr. Chairman. So one thing I don't see in this report, and maybe it's premature, but it seems like we should be maintaining a progress against the schedule, and my concern is that the on page 9, the $52.8 million in loans that are out, each of those loans contains a provision that they're in deferral essentially until we deliver gas against that project, and that timeline is, I believe, understandably, but is likely slipping. So I think we should be reporting against that anticipated schedule.
That's a good idea. Because whether it's the legislature or you as a board to know where we are, because we have the information from both vendors on when they would expect construction to happen and where we are on schedule. It didn't occur to me to include it in this, but we certainly can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I already gave my summary in response to one of Senator Wilkins' questions. We expect the evaluation committee to meet on the 22nd, absent delays in gas supply contracts. The vendors are doing their jobs. You know, the people negotiating commercial terms. We've met with the utilities at least four times to go through where we are to make sure we don't kind of outrun our headlights on us making progress that the utilities haven't bought on. And so... So we would look, depending on how things go on the 22nd, to poll the board about a special meeting, probably the middle to the end of February. If it has to push to the March 3rd meeting, we can make that happen. But I would expect the end of February we'd have information to you a couple weeks in advance that's also public that will allow a process to evaluate. And that really, I won't be able to tell you that until we see what happens on the 22nd. But that's the timeline right now is meet on the 22nd, poll you for a special board meeting sometime in the last 2 weeks of February to act in advance of your March board in that and that is consistent with the project development schedules from both proposers. So it wouldn't matter which one was picked in terms of knowing when we move forward. Like I used to end my report so that everyone knew, and that concludes my staff report.
So just so we're on the same page, it's going to be a recommendation, correct?
Correct. Oh, yes.
As far as what between both north and south, right?
Yep.
And I would assume the board would have the ability to have all the information from both proposals at the ready.
Not only that, but I would, at that point, you will also have a project plan that's compliant with House Bill 105, because that cues the ability to use the money on the development plan.
Further questions, Gary?
So, Bob, you're still on as the IEP leader through that event?
Gene's actually the IEP team leader, but I'm on carrying the procurement process and project selection through till it's done.
So you're still with us for another three or four meetings?
Yes, sir.
You have a place right here.
Yeah. I was told by the chair that he has a jet and he can find me if I fail to show.
Thank you.
Further questions from the board?
That little drone that was following that gas truck. He can find
you. Me too. Thank you,
guys. All right, item C, resolution number G15-02B. Approving expenditures to evaluate alternatives to the North Slope concession agreement. Just want to put that on the table for us.
Term accept.
Okay. Thank you. John?
Yes. Item 7C, resolution G15-02B. It was a request to amend the original resolution and provide budget for continued evaluation of alternative means to supply energy to Interior Alaska as discussed in the IEP update. The request is to increase the authorization by $300,000 from either the original SEPS fund authorization or the original economic development account authorization. Nick Simoniak is here to present and answer questions. I'd also mention that in June 2015, the board authorized an increase from $500,000 to $1 million from the original SEPS fund authorization, and an increase from the original economic development account authorization from $200,000 to $400,000. And there's one adjustment that we would need to make in the resolution on page 3 of the resolution. It shows in your board packets after section 4, dated at Fairbanks, Alaska, this 13th day of January 2016,
would
be
that.
Anchorage kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He must have been at Fairbanks
last year. So before Nick starts, could someone tell me exactly how much we've got into this? So far as we're increasing here almost another 50%.
With regards to this resolution or?
The $1 million, I guess, this is all internally spent, correct, with consultants and internal staff?
All the spending since phase two has been internal staff and consultants.
Yeah. And you were asking the $700,000, so how much have we spent to date?
Out of the $1 million appropriation, I think the last, we've spent under $600,000, or at least that's as of December 29th. There may have been more invoices coming in since then, but we anticipate that out of that $1 million, there's enough remaining budget to get us through the scope that's in this resolution.
Okay.
Which... the scope of this resolution gets us through selection of a project partner. At that point, we'd imagine we come forward with a new resolution to finding a new scope for the next stage of the project and stop spending money under this resolution.
So we're going to, right now we've committed if we adopt this resolution, it would be $1.7 million.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Mr. Shimoniak, I didn't hear the spend number on the 400,000. You said less than 600 of the million. What's been spent of the other?
Of the 400,000? The 400,000 has been completely spent, and the 400,000 is intended to cover our staff and facilities. Of that, we've spent the full 400,000 and we've actually begun to fund that out of a separate ADA operating account. So this resolution would allow us to capitalize those the spending out of the operating account into the project funds and provide enough budget for us to get through most of April. We wouldn't imagine that if we do come before the board by the end of February with a resolution that we would stop spending by the end of February.
So I'd like to throw off something here. For me, it's tough to. I mean, it's kind of like we're in a corner here. Either spend it or you've already spent it. I would suggest that future that once any fund is 75% spent or committed, and at that time you would be able to anticipate to need more, then becomes an agenda item for this board. You know, spending the 400,000 and then coming back and saying, well, we're now going to go to another account. And we need the 700 if they come back. I mean, that's. I don't think that's prudent business. I think I'd better served if we do that. I defer to the board's comments or suggestions on that.
Mr. Chairman, just follow up. I wanted to go back to what's been accomplished by the spend to date versus what's necessary to get to the finish line. And is this the finish line? And so this is our. We had an original appropriation, an amended appropriation, and this is a further second amendment to the appropriation. So, echoing your concern, this feels loose to me.
I think it's fair on behalf of the IEP team that during the June 2015 board meeting, the $500,000 increase from the original assessment authorization and the $200,000 increase from the original economic development account authorization was anticipated for activities through December 2015.
Which it did serve.
Yes, which it did serve. And then there are additional activities because of the additional bargaining and discussions with the 50 finalists that has pushed those activities through this quarter.
So for me, I understand the request, and I'm not questioning this. That's been prudent. It's about timing and notice and understanding, so the board has understanding where we're at, what you're committed to, where we're going, and also at some point, you know, this is $300,000. Is some generic where you can spend the $300,000? Is it going to be? There's nothing that references. Are you spending it because of the actions that we're taking now? Pick someone to deal with. It's just what makes up the additional request. Something paragraph as a supplement to the resolution for board education.
Chair, I completely appreciate your comments and would like to apologize if this is something that came to our attention that we would need more funding in December. We decided not to put this on the resolution last night at the December 17th board meeting, and as a result, we had to wait until this one and did have to start spending another account, but that was not by design, and we do not anticipate that going forward.
Well, that 75% threshold really helps.
Yes, so,
and it affords the opportunity for the board to ask questions and not be at a back against the wall.
And within that spirit, if we achieve the project schedule that we're aiming for, and come back to you and have a recommendation by the end of February, we would not need the full 300,000. The 300,000 buys us another probably month and a half at least of work beyond when we imagine needing more funds.
Gary?
So, Nick, on the report on page 9, this summarizes all the expenditures. Where do the numbers that you're speaking of, where do they fall in there, or should there be a fourth column?
The report to the legislature requires us to make a report on funding associated with the IEP legislation, SB 23, and then the capital budget, which is SB 26 that year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's 18, sorry. The other funding has come from other ADA accounts,
mm-hmm.
Including the original sets appropriation, the non-IEP sets appropriation, either capital account or economic development account, as well as the fiscal note associated with SB 23, which is actually ADA operating funding. So those are not in this account, but that's what we internally we are tracking total spend against those accounts as well.
Okay. So for our purposes, there could be a fourth column that is entitled other funds or something.
Certainly, for internal budgeting, that's what we would
internal. And I would volunteer here that that type of reporting is excluded from what's provided to the legislature. Yes. But yeah, for the board purposes, we'll make a note and
that might be interesting. Just to kind of an all-in number.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, before we vote, I just want to acknowledge Mr. Springsteen's detail on the timing and how that came to be. I appreciate it.
Yes. Further questions on the from Nick or John on the resolution?
Questions
been asked. Fred, who's?
Mr. Wilson.
Aye.
Mr. Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Ms. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Okay, that brings us to item D on our agenda, which will like to entertain a motion to go to executive session to discuss the items related to the IDP, Brookline Petroleum, Mustang Operations Center, and potential legislation.
So moved.
Second.
I have to say what we're doing.
Thank you.